know, some interesting news coming down about the Raptors and the Milwaukee Bucks. At the top of the show and throughout, I was saying take the Raptors as a 7.5-point underdog against the Milwaukee Bucks, a game you can listen to right here on TSN 1050. Well, Josh Lewenberg just tweeting out moments ago, Giannis Antetokounmpo will miss tonight's game against the Raptors with a non-COVID illness. The Bucks will be without their MVP and their head coach, Mike Budenholzer, who is entering the health and safety protocols earlier today. Because, you know, everyone in sports is always entering the health and safety protocols. So the line opened. Oh, it's already moved. The line opened up Milwaukee favored by 7.5. It's now moved down to 3.5 to 4. So anyone who got the, who were able to lock the Raptors as a 7-point or 7.5-point underdog, good on ya. Conrad, this has changed what you're doing. It's in Milwaukee. It's back-to-back for the Raptors. There's still Chris Middleton. There's still Drew Holiday, but no Giannis. And the Raptors, I know they've beaten up on bad teams, so the fact is they're beating up on them. You know, that is significant. They're not, like, barely squeaking by. Look what they did to the Spurs last night. What direction would you go in now with this game?
Yeah, so I'm still probably going to stick away from either the money line or the spread, but what I really like now, Matt, is the Fred VanVleet over for points and assists number. He's been on absolute, that number is 28.5. He's been on absolute fire. And he had a 33 points plus assists game versus Milwaukee on December 2nd. Now you have no Giannis clogging up the lane there. I like Fred VanVleet to get the over on that number.
Yeah, and I'm looking up 27.5. So you bet minus 125. So you bet 125. You win 100. Yeah, that's it's a good bet. It's a good, and VanVleet. He's hitting like, wait, Wesley Chang on from TSN Edge was talking about how he's hitting like close to like 50% of his threes over like the last like 8-10 games or something around there. But he's shooting at 40% from three, and he's taking 9 threes a game. That is Steph Curry like numbers. So yeah, that is a good bet. So if you're just tuning in, Giannis will not be in the lineup tonight. I'm a little bit bummed out. I wanted to see, even if it meant a loss, I wanted to see the Raptors going up against a fully healthy Milwaukee team, sort of take the temperature, see where we're at with the Raps. But again, back-to-back, on the road, defending champs. Middleton and Drew Holiday are excellent players, so it still will be a test, but certainly an easier one. And yeah, that is a big loss tonight for the Milwaukee Bucks. I wanted to get into some sort of philosophical stuff when it comes to the NFL. And Conrad, if you could give me the Hub Arkish sound. Hub Arkish, he used to be like the editor for Pro Football Weekly, which was an excellent newspaper back in the day before there was the internet. And, you know, you didn't have much NFL coverage here in Canada. And now he's an NFL writer with the Associated Press. Here's him about Aaron Rodgers being the biggest jerk in the league.
I don't think you can be the biggest jerk in the league and punish your team and your organization and your fan base the way he did and be the most valuable player. Has he been the most valuable on the field? Yeah, you could make that argument, but I don't think he is clearly that much more valuable than Jonathan Taylor or Cooper Kupp or maybe even Tom Brady. And so from where I sit, the rest of it is why he's not going to be my choice. Do I think he's going to win it? Probably. You know, a lot of the voters don't approach it the same way that I do. Others do, who I've spoken to. But one of the ways we get to keep being voters is we're not allowed to say who we are voting for until after the award has been announced. I'm probably pushing the envelope by saying who I'm not voting for. But we're not really supposed to reveal our votes.
First off, you should reveal your votes. And this is something we've talked about for ages and ages and ages. I want to know. I put your name to it. And not even who you vote for, the MVP or whatever award. I want to know who your second and your third place is. Now, if you don't vote for Aaron Rodgers because his stance when it comes to the vaccine meant he had to miss a game, the KC game, and Jordan Love had to play, it was horrible. If that is your reason, fine. Don't vote for Aaron for MVP, because then it's tied into a conversation of availability. But it should never be a personality contest. It should, and by the way, like I know people said, oh, yeah, Hub should have his vote taken away or things like that. I'm not going to go that far. But I don't agree with this. I don't agree that it should be based on personality. Because look at the production this year from Aaron Rodgers. And what we haven't heard, and you know, we'll have to wait and see. There certainly was in the past. Some former teammates weren't exactly thrilled with him. But I haven't heard of any players out there, any sources saying Aaron Rodgers is not liked in the locker room. Maybe he isn't. But the team certainly likes winning. But also say this, Pro Football Focus, they just put an article the other day saying that Brady actually still was a better quarterback than Aaron Rodgers. And that if you go and you look at the interceptions that Brady's thrown, a bunch of them were like, you know, Hail Marys at the end of a half or crazy deflected ball that where, you know, the interceptions say he's thrown this amount, but really it probably should be a couple less. But Conrad, your thoughts on Hub Arkish, where, I mean, he doesn't come out and, well, I mean, he does say he's not voting for Aaron Rodgers. But your thoughts there on what Hub had to say, where it could be tied into, I think he's a jerk, I'm not giving him the MVP.
Yeah, I mean, I never really liked that argument. It kind of reminds me a little bit of how the NFL Hall of Fame voters kept Terrell Owens out for a little while. And listen, if we want to include personality in this or what people do off the field, then fine. And make that known and make that actually part of what we're voting on. But since that's not actually a part of what we're voting on, then I don't know how you really include it. If we're just looking at the player on the field, I think Hub Arkish makes a great point that Jonathan Taylor and Tom Brady are also phenomenal candidates for the award. But with that being said, if he's not voting on Aaron Rodgers just simply because he doesn't like the guy, that's hogwash in my brain.
Oh, hogwash.
Hogwash.
You're going with the strong language there. Going with... You realize you just aged yourself by about 10 years by saying hogwash.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. I'm a mature nearly 31-year-old.
It's pure malarkey, I tell you. And that, all right, I'm not going to do all the old person sayings. We'll debate the Cooper Cup one a little bit later, but give me the Zach Hyman sound. Edmonton traveling to Toronto, no Connor McDavid in the lineup. Austin Matthews, it looks like he will be playing. He said it to Kristen Shilton and other reporters. But Zach Hyman, the big shame is, you know, he doesn't get to get any sort of applause from the crowd as, there's no one at games now. Here's Zach Hyman on the disappointment of coming back without fans.
I mean, it's reality, right? And I think that people have been disappointed for the last couple of years now, so I think everybody's used to it, but obviously would like to have fans in the building and would like it to be normal and would like everybody to be playing on both sides. But reality is we're still in this, and hopefully we're coming out of it now, and things can get back to normal soon.
Oh, he's such a nice guy. Of course, it is interesting, like, give Leafs management a ton of credit. Michael Bunting, 21 points in 21 games, makes under $1 million. Andre Kasha, 16 points in 28 games, $1.25 million. David Kampf, 10 points in 31 games, $1.5 million. Those three guys are still a couple million less than Zach Hyman at $5.5 million. His contract, Hyman, 20 points in 30 games. And nothing against Hyman. Hyman's doing well. Hyman's a really good player. But the Leafs, they took the hit, and they have been able to thrive without Zach Hyman. Speaking of the Maple Leafs, Mark Masters is going to join us next. We'll get the latest update of who is and who is not in the lineup. That's coming up right here on Gameplay. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. Tonight, it is Leafs and Edmonton. And if you can still find the line out there, I definitely like taking betting the Toronto Maple Leafs, but it is at minus 296. Maybe take the puck line at minus 123, which means they got to win by more than one goal. Joining me now, and of course this is because Connor McDavid is out and Austin Matthews is going to play, Mark Masters, our Leafs reporter. And Mark, before we get into who is and who is not in the lineup tonight, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm feeling good, relatively speaking, I guess, and been feeling better by the day since the symptoms started, and making good progress, I would say.
Good. And my other question, where are you right now?
I'm home.
Oh, good. Okay.
I flew home yesterday. What happened is, obviously, when I initially tested positive, it was a 10-day isolation, and then Alberta followed the approach of Ontario and a lot of other jurisdictions, the CBC stateside, and reduced its isolation period from 10 days to 5 days, and then I stayed an extra day just to make sure, you know, because I had had symptoms and was feeling better, and got my isolation lifted. Air Canada said I was good to travel, so I flew home, got home late last night. So I'm back in Toronto, and after a crazy 4-week sojourn on the World Junior beat.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm glad you're home. I'm glad you're feeling better. I'm sorry for that journey, which, you know, is an inconvenient one, which is a nice way of putting it. So as of now, it's Zach Hyman playing in front of empty fans with Draisaitl, but no McDavid. There might not be Tyson Barrie, but Matthews, it looks like he is going to play. Am I missing anything in terms of lineup shenanigans that it could be COVID or non-COVID related?
Geez, I hate to do this to you. I'm kind of out of the loop. I have
done. No, stop.
I have caught up on the.
Then we're moving on. We're moving on from that. I actually prefer, as I say this thing, I had a guest yesterday who was saying something like, "Yeah, no, I'm not sure." I love I'm not sure. You know, because so many times in our business,
are we sure of anything right now these days?
Or are we going? Okay. Let's go there. Let's go philosophical. I threw out this tweet. What is more, which fan base has it more difficult? Edmonton Oilers fan or Toronto Maple Leaf fan? And the argument I brought up with, if you focus a lot on the past, it's a slam dunk. Being a Leafs fan is way, way worse. But if we focus on the if we put more focus on the present and whatever the future might be, I think you can make an argument being an Oilers fan is tougher than being a Leafs fan. How you brought up philosophical questions, Mark. So how say you, sir?
That is it's a tricky one, because I think both fan bases are looking at having so much talent on their roster right now and not wanting to waste it, right? So I think that they're both in a similar headspace of, we've got this great moment in time, which we haven't really seen the best of yet. You know, the Leafs haven't won a series, of course, in many, many moons, and the Oilers, they've got the one series win on their resume in the McDavid era, but there's certainly hope for much more. So in terms of, I'd say they're pretty similar right now in terms of the present and the future. I think the Leafs certainly seem to be in a better spot presently, that's for sure. So I guess I would have to say that it's tougher to be an Oilers fan right now at the moment. But both, it's a pretty similar, I think, headspace probably in this exact moment in time. The Leafs fans have got to be feeling a lot better just based on how the season has played out to date, right? I mean, they've been red hot. We'll see what happens now moving forward. I find you talk about being philosophical. I, of course, watched Austin Matthews' media availability today, and he was being asked, you know, if, you know, you're relieved or whatever to be back and playing after missing a couple of days at false positive. And he said he had actually had a previous false positive. And then he jokingly said the kind of gallows humor, maybe third time will be the charm, because he was asked about potentially playing in Arizona next week, his homecoming game. And so he's basically joking about a potential positive test. This is where we're at right now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't know what's going to be around the corner. And that's all he can say right now, because it's just, you can see it on his face and you can see it in his voice that everyone's just kind of tired to be back in the spot.
Yeah, and I imagine at some point you're going to get numb to it. Which I understand people getting upset by that because it is a pandemic and all that, but just as a coping mechanism, it has to be so difficult for all players in all sports where, players love consistency. They love schedule. This is when I nap. This is when I do this. And it seems like every day, if you're a player, you wake up, you're not sure if you're going to get to play, and you're not too sure who your line mates are going to be.
I'm sure for Austin as well. I mean, it just feels like a lot of times in his career, he's been putting together pretty amazing stretches, and there's been these unforeseen things that have popped up and slowed down his positive momentum. You know, I think Steven Stamkos, when he was in town earlier this year, basically said, this is a guy who's been robbed of a couple 50 goal seasons, maybe 60, who knows? So I'm sure in his mind, he's what else can you do, right? Except just laugh at that and just say, like, what's next? Like, you don't want to take anything for granted, because, you know, right when you think you've got it figured out, that's usually when something unforeseen pops up. So that's where they're at. I mean, you're looking at the schedule right now. If you're a member of the Maple Leafs, you got to be feeling positive or good. That's the thing about this day and age. You don't even want to use the word positive as a as an adjective in a positive way. Anyway, you got to be feeling good that once you get past tomorrow, which is the canceled or the postponed Montreal game, you see a lot of games that are on the schedule that you'll get to play, a road trip which with fans, which will be nice. So Colorado, Vegas, Arizona, St. Louis coming up. So you'll have a series of games here at least that will get played. Bit of a strange schedule with, you know, 2 days off after this Edmonton game, 2 days after the Colorado game on Saturday, a back-to-back, two more days off, and then St. Louis. So it'll be an interesting schedule, but at least I got to think that just from a mental standpoint after this, what, one game and X number of days, that they can look and say, okay, we're going to play for the next week. Almost everyone on the team's had it, and there's some sanity, some stability there. So it feels like you're at least moving in the right direction.
Ah, stability, something we all crave. Joined by Leafs reporter Mark Masters. Mark, you've interviewed lots and lots and lots of players and lots of coaches over your day. And, yeah, Dave Tippett saying our goaltender wasn't very good. All right, you know, I've seen the arguments. You're like, why are you saying that to the media? But I think the worst comment was his goalie's comment coming out and saying, Koskinen, it must also be said that in the six games I lost, the team has scored seven goals. I can't score goals. It's not always up to the goalkeeper alone to win or lose. If I am Koskinen, I think I'm regretting that comment.
Yeah, you're not wrong, but I don't know if anyone should be saying any of this out loud, whether it be Tippett or Koskinen.
Yes.
If you don't have goaltending, you got nothing, Cos. It's terrible. I mean, listen, it's part of the problem that the Oilers are having, that's for sure. They haven't been getting enough saves, but you know, it is part of it. But goaltending is everything in hockey. If the team doesn't believe in the goaltending, if the coach doesn't believe in the goaltending and lets it slip there, I mean, it's hard to come back from that. I remember when Randy Carlyle said, you know, just okay. And the reason that reverberated around Leafs Nation is he had usually been very careful, and most coaches are, to not throw the goaltending under the bus because you just rely on it so much. And you need them to be in a good headspace, and you need to protect them even when they're not playing well. Obviously, this has been a long road now with Koskinen in Edmonton, but, you know, Reimer and Carlisle never recovered from that, for sure. And Reimer himself, along with the team, went into a huge nosedive after that because he didn't believe he had the confidence. And it was already a strange situation with what had played out with Bernier earlier in the year and he losing the job. So if you don't have goaltending, you don't have anything. And that's where the Oilers are right now. They're in this kind of they're lost a little bit at this moment because the goaltending in many ways is your anchor, is your guiding light there. And you can see the impact that Jack Campbell has had. I mean, where are the Leafs without Jack Campbell having the season he's had with Peter Mrazek being on the shelf for as long as he has been? So there's another big difference between Leafs Nation and Oilers Nation right now. Leafs at least know they have goaltending. They don't know what next year brings. They don't know what the contract looks like, XXX, all that, but they know they have Jack Campbell right now playing like a Vezina Trophy nominee, and the Oilers, they do not.
Not so much. Not so much. Yeah, between
bet
him
the and over.
Yeah. Yes. By the way, the over is six goals at -120. So you bet 120, you win 100. I absolutely, I'm taking the over. I'm taking the Leafs on the puck line. You mentioned contracts, Mark, and you know this gets brought up just because Zach Hyman makes his glorious return to Toronto to zero fanfare. But like Bunting and Andre Kasha and David Kempf, those guys have, you know, those guys have put up 47 total points, and they're all making collectively about $2 million less than Hyman. So you got to give a tip of the, and I know Nick Ritchie hasn't worked out, but you got to give a tip of the cap to Leafs management. They have, at least so far, they have found a way to replace Zach Hyman.
Absolutely. Now, and you asked about the lineup, and I do know Cash is out tonight, and Engvall moves up, and Nick Ritchie moves into the lineup, so I know that. So they'll be without Kasha today, but he's been he's delivered and then some for the Leafs, exactly what they would want. A lot of the guys they brought in are actually similar. I mean, Ritchie would be the difference. That's a low bet, or I guess what some people would say a higher bet that didn't pay off for the Maple Leafs so far, and obviously coming off a healthy scratch, we'll see what he brings. But Kasha and Bunting are the kind of low maintenance guys, low maintenance, high energy, high effort guys that you need. And both of them have kind of helped fill the void for sure that Zach Hyman left. And I do feel for Zach Hyman tonight because he would have gotten a tremendous ovation as a local kid
who
built himself up and did everything, you know, the Leafs asked of him and then some. And I feel very good for him that he got the contract I think he deserved. And we'll see how things play out in Edmonton. But from a Leafs perspective, it's worked out okay for sure so far. And you would say, well, maybe they'll miss him in the playoffs. But, you know, you look at the track record and you have to shift the formula. I don't think anyone thought Hyman was the problem. But maybe you have a little bit more backup now with two guys like Bunting and Kasha. I think you need as many guys like Hyman as possible. So those bets have certainly paid off. Bunting's proven, I think, that he has what it takes to – so far, at least, to play alongside talented line mates and make the most of the opportunity. We'll see how it plays out the rest of the season. But it's been really positive or very good so far for the Leafs in that department.
Mark, always appreciate. I'm glad you're feeling better. Actually, before I let you go, how do you think the Aussie Open is going to play out on the men's side? I don't know how close you've been following it, but Djokovic. It's not that he's not being allowed in because of not taking the vaccine, but because of an issue with his visa. I mean, he didn't take long to start the drama for this year, did he?
Boy, it's fascinating, isn't it? Like, if this is a soap opera playing out in Australia right now, and Djokovic's father issuing a statement saying, you know, his son is basically in a room with the Melbourne police in the airport. This is... Yeah, you'd want that squared away before you make the trip down under, wouldn't you? So this is very interesting. The drama has been ratcheted up to. I was seeing Chrissy Everett just reposted a meme of like the customs guard, and it's Roger Federer denying Djokovic entry. So the stakes, and that's just a reminder of how the stakes are, right? I mean, he's going down there to try and break a three-way tie for the Grand Slam leaderboard, and it's his best Grand Slam, and he's a hero. You know, he's that's his Grand Slam. If Federer is Wimbledon and Nadal's the French Open, it's Djokovic has been the Australian guy. So this is the stakes are high. You wonder how it's going to affect him mentally. He seems impervious to that sort of stuff, but boy, what drama. I mean, there's one guy I'd want to interview right now in the world. It's from whatever he's going through right now. It'd be Novak Djokovic to hear, you know, cause you know, for a guy like that, he's usually so used to being in control of every aspect of his life. And we know he's strict with his diet, and he's every, I think, moment of his life is accounted for. And so to be going through what he's going through now is going to be tough, as it would be for anyone. So the drama's been ratcheted up to 11. I can't wait to watch the Australian Open, and we'll see if Novak Djokovic indeed makes it to the starting line.
Oh, yeah, and whenever a tennis player is now asked about him, some of the British guys, we're not holding back. Ah, absolutely glorious. Thank you,
Novak.
Oh, yeah,
the press conferences are pretty hilarious. If you go on and watch just the ATP Cups happening right now, and everyone is just kind of falling all over themselves to be a little political, and then the person at the podium with them is trying to be political. But I mean, Djokovic at the Australian Open, I mean, from a gambling perspective, all things considered, if it's just a vacuum and he's playing at the Australian Open, I think that's right up there with Nadal at the French Open right now in terms of being favored. I guess Nadal, because you just don't know Nadal injury-wise, I think right now in this moment in time, Djokovic at the Australian Open, just with his track record there, I mean, that's got to be one of the great favorites, maybe not even in tennis, just in all sports. So that's the stakes that are playing out right now.
It is. It's incredible. And God, if he can't get in the Aussie Open because of this, Jesus. Also, it needs to be said, he's going to win it. Win it at Wimbledon. Set a record at Wimbledon, not the Aussie Open. Apologies to Australia. I love you for other things. Mark, thanks so much. Thanks so much, my friend. Take care.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
On the other side, Cooper Kupp talks about if he can break Calvin Johnson's record, should it really count? We get into that in a moment. You are listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. So we get a bonus week of football. We get week 18 as teams are playing 17 games. It's a strange number. I don't like odd numbers. Eventually, we know it'll be 18 games. Everyone will be angry and upset. They'll talk about greedy, greedy owners. They'll ignore the fact that the players have to agree on it as well, and they get a lot more money by doing it. But that's a rant for another day. But the question is, if individual records, single-season records, get broken, how do you view it with it being 17 weeks? Let's hear from Cooper Kupp, who's had just an incredible season. He's on track to become the fourth player during the Super Bowl era to get the triple crown for receivers, receptions, touchdowns, and yards. He's got a league-high 1,829 yards. That is ridiculous. Now, the record holder is Calvin Johnson at 1,964. So still going to need a fairly big day, of, you know, certainly over 100 or 120, 130, something like that, 135 yards. Look at me doing math on the fly. But Cooper Kupp was asked about, how do you feel about breaking that record?
In all honesty, in my opinion, what the guys did that set those records, what those guys did in 16 games, you know, it wouldn't seem right to, I don't know, for those to be broken in 17 games. It just doesn't, it wouldn't hold the same weight to me as it does for guys that have done that in a 16-game season. And when the accomplishments that those guys had, the seasons those guys put together, those are incredible things, incredible accomplishments. So you kind of have to separate the two. You know, we're in a new age of football here where we're playing 17 games a year. A lot of the stuff that had happened before that, I think those records hold a different weight.
And he's right. When Calvin Johnson, when he set the record of 1,964 yards, he did that in 16 games. So I appreciate that Cooper Kupp's like, yeah, it kind of doesn't really feel the same. I know T.J. Watt could break Michael Strahan's single-season record for sacks. And then the other thought I had in all of this is that we really, and again, it's you know, we really only baseball do we really focus on records. Like, Conrad, how often have you been thinking about the single-season receiving record that Calvin Johnson set 9 years ago?
Not going to lie, it's not on the top of my mind on a weekly basis.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I forgot who had the record, and it's not even that long ago. I just assumed, oh, it's Jerry Rice. I'm like, no, it's Calvin Johnson. By the way, I've talked about this before, but the single for me, not the greatest season. I won't go greatest season. I'm not going to go with that sort of hyperbole, but maybe the sneaky most impressive season ever by a receiver. Have I spoken to you about Josh Gordon?
Of course. We love Josh Gordon here.
In 2013, Josh Gordon had 1,646 yards. And he did that in 14 games. And his quarterbacks were Jason Campbell, Brandon Weeden, and Brian Hoyer. Now, Gordon averaged just over 117 yards per game to get that. And Calvin Johnson, though, still has a higher number than that. But Calvin Johnson was at 122.8. But at least Calvin Johnson had Matthew Stafford throwing him the ball versus Josh Gordon having those quarterbacks throw him the ball.
Oh, undoubtedly. I think, if I can remember correctly, I think the Browns were off to like a 3-1 or nearly 4-1 start that season, and then Brian Hoyer tore his ACL, and the rest is history. They didn't make the playoffs again.
Yeah, and I mean, God, what a waste of a talent in Gordon. You know, misses all of 15 because of substance abuse, all of 16 because of substance abuse. It's been bouncing around pretty much since then, a little bit with Cleveland, New England, Seattle. He's now apparently in Kansas City. But, yeah, go back and look at that 2013 season. And, again, you have to put in the proper context. It's not just the numbers. It's also who was throwing him the ball. And the who was pretty, pretty sad. Before I go to break, I was mentioned talking a little bit about Djokovic with Mark Masters. And just to clarify, he did receive an exemption from the Australian government to play in the Aussie Open. And the CEO of the Aussie Open said that Djokovic underwent a completely legitimate application and process. But, and so everyone's getting angry about it, but Djokovic, since he's landed in Melbourne, I don't know if it's changed, he remains stuck at passport control after a mix-up with his visa application. Means that right now he has been technically denied entry into Australia, just not for the reason that a lot of people want him to be denied entry into Australia. So I just wanted, you know, that to get out there, and it's going to be great drama, and I hope he gets the play, mostly just because I want to see the reaction from other Australians and other tennis players that are involved as well. On the other side, Mark Schofield's going to join the show. He always does a great job, works for USA Today, specifically the Touchdown Wire, and breaking down the game film of Trey Lance, of Dak Prescott. There is a, can you trust Matt Stafford in the playoffs? The decline of Russell Wilson. So much to get to. That's coming up in a moment. But first, time now for a News Talk 1010 traffic update.